Hey everyone, this is Matt Logan, and it's the Matt Logan Music Podcast. I'm recording from my home office in Oakland, California. And it's been a while since I've put one of these up, and I've got plenty of excuses, and they all suck. So I'm not going to run through that list right now. I don't have a guest today, so instead I'm just going to read a blog post that I wrote in February. And I'm reading it because it was, well, I was reminded of it when listening to a really incredible interview earlier today, and that was on the Tim Ferriss podcast, and it was an interview with a doctor, a physician named B.J. Miller, and he is a hospice and palliative care doc in San Francisco, and he had some really, really fascinating things to say, and in fact, it was like he was, and this is an example of it right now, he articulated very well what I've tried to when describing my work in hospice and palliative care, which I've done in many different settings, working with hospice agencies in Iowa when I was there, working in adult palliative care at the University of Iowa hospitals and clinics, and then even out here in the Bay Area, working in pediatrics and having to do quite a bit of palliative care with my patients, with several of my patients, obviously a small percentage of them, but still it was an important part of the work, and the palliative care team is one of the teams that I worked closely with, and I just can never say enough about what they do and the importance of palliative care, and then also the role of arts in palliative care and in medicine, and it's something that's really important to me and something that's I've seen, I guess what I'm saying is I've just seen the effects on so many people, how the arts, how music can affect us at such an intense period of our lives. And oftentimes people who are, I guess I should have prefaced and explained what palliative care is. And that is basically symptom management, often associated with life-limiting illness. And then under that palliative care umbrella is hospice care, which deals specifically with care at the end of life. So check out that episode. Just look up the Tim Ferriss show or the Tim Ferriss podcast. If you just Google that, you will find it for sure. And give it a listen because it's really, really an inspiring podcast. And that leads into this article that I wrote. I'm not really sure. I think I was just journaling or reflecting one day and this kind of emerged. So I don't really know where it came from or why this particular question popped into my head, but it's basically my response to a question, is music sacred? So now I'm just going to read that down. And I would love to know what you think about this too. And you can comment on the blog post at mattloganmusic.com. Okay, here we go. Is music sacred? Though I've teetered between agnosticism and atheism for the last 8 years or so, there is at least one thing for which I do have significant reverence. As you would probably guess from the title of this piece, it's music. Why? Because of the lifelong accumulation of experiences that suggest it's much more than just auditory cheesecake. The word sacred seems to refer to something spiritual, and importantly, some of the most impressive evidence, for me at least, comes from witnessing departures from this life into possibly the next. This could get a bit uncomfortable because I'm going to talk about death for a minute. Perhaps the most moving of these experiences have come at the time of death. I recognize that this particular scenario has not been experienced by many of us, but because of my work as a music therapist, I've provided music in this very situation many, many times. I'll talk about that experience more in my next paragraphs, and then I'll talk about other ways music affects us in a seemingly or possibly sacred way. At the time of death, one of the most profound functions of music is to bring some order to an environment that is sonically chaotic. In a situation where dying is imminent, there's a variety of random, scary, and/or obnoxious sounds that are likely to fill the air. If in a hospital, you might hear alarms, beeps, and other mechanical noises. You'll also hear the sounds of the dying, troubled breathing, sometimes crying, moaning, and the heart-wrenching sounds of grief. Hospice has introduced the possibility of something called a beautiful death, but these sounds hardly contribute. And we know we are viscerally and emotionally affected by sounds. That's why movie studios spend stacks of money enhancing both the musical and non-musical sound elements of a film, and it dramatically impacts our perceptions and responses. And perhaps as uncomfortable as these auditory intrusions is the dense heaviness of silence. So what does music change? For one, it gives our ears the order that they crave. Music makes sense to us, so we are able to focus on that. The unpredictability and foreignness of the other sounds is antagonistic to any feelings of peace or comfort. The introduction of melody and harmony can mask or even incorporate these sounds. Just giving structure to an otherwise chaotic environment can significantly change the experience. After the environment is under control, you can consider everything else that music might do in that situation. Song choice can affirm the identity of the person who is passing. This is a true story. I once played There's a Tear in My Beer while a patient of mine was on her deathbed, and it was comforting for both her and her family. The rhythm of music also helps those present to get control of their breathing, either by singing along or in training to the tempo. A specific song or message might also give permission and or strength to the dying, allowing them to let go of life. Music can also bring a family together. Often when no one knows what to say, nothing is said, there's isolation. But I can't even recall how many times a song has brought a family together, either in singing or in reminiscence and storytelling. But the sacredness of music isn't just felt at the end of life. It's just those moments provided the most salient evidence to me. My guess is that almost all of us have experienced inexplicable euphoria, perhaps even some sort of transcendence, thanks to specific songs or musical moments. They send shivers down our spines. We feel especially connected to another person, an entire group of people, or to ourselves. And I would argue that more people pursue this type of transcendence than any other. It's why there are so many bands, so many music festivals, and so many people bobbing their earbudded heads on the subway. Music is a whole body, whole brain experience, and you don't have to make music yourself to get it. Does this make music sacred? I started the essay with that question, and I'm not convinced yet that it's an important one or that it can be or should be answered with any amount of certainty. And even though I've been involved in so many memorable moments, I've also heard my fair share of garbage music. I think the question stems from my personal need of a word that is bigger and better than potential substitutes like powerful, mighty, or potent. Perhaps the word sacred seems apt because it implies that it's worthy of reverence and does in fact have some mystical qualities. If we stay the course and attempt to answer it, I suppose we need to turn to our friends at Merriam-Webster. Their simple definition is worthy of religious worship, very holy, or second definition, relating to religion, or third definition, highly valued and important, deserving great respect. The strongest argument I can probably make is for the third definition, highly valued and deserving great respect. It's clear that it's highly valued in both our everyday lives and in extenuating circumstances, such as the approach of death. We know it's highly valued given the resources devoted to it and the lengths to which people will go to experience it or even master it as an art form. The first definition, worthy of religious worship, is also close, but it doesn't quite capture it. There's something mysterious about the ways music moves us, which is probably why it's been involved with religion for so long. But it's clear that secular music can have the same mysterious and mystical effects. Does this make it worthy of worship? Maybe. We certainly have examples of the creators of music being exalted as superhuman. For example, the word diva is actually an Italian word for a female deity. Similarly, we often refer to the most successful artists in a given genre as gods or goddesses. I believe that we acknowledge the sacredness of music itself through the colloquial deification of its top trendsetters and performers. And little side note, I apologize for the stuffy words there. If I could go back and rewrite this, I might be less, I don't know, it just seems like too much. Anyway, moving on, music provides nourishment in so many ways, from facilitating shared social experiences to sparking intellectual and creative growth. It gives comfort, stimulates movement, builds communities, evokes the imagination, and engages the spirit. And so then I just end with the question, is music sacred? So that's the end of the piece, and this is a pretty short podcast, and I do thank you for tuning in and giving it a quick listen. My intention is to do more of these, and I, you know, it's certainly really fun to do this with guests and to have interviews, and if you're like me, you get tired of my voice. But stay tuned. And a great way to do that is to go over to mattloganmusic.com and just key in your email address. You'll see where. And then I will send you emails when new episodes come out. Or just go to iTunes, which might be where you're hearing this anyway, but subscribe to Matt Logan Music on iTunes. Thank you very much, and I will talk to you next time.